You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome, everyone, to another new episode of Locked On Rockets, the only daily podcast covering the NBA's best basketball team. I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official flagship. As we chat this Monday evening, it's another off day for the Rockets. Technically, they're back in action tomorrow night, late game at Los Angeles, the Lakers. Then they'll be at Sacramento on Wednesday night, a road back-to-back to finish the season. But let's be real, as Chris Paul said after the game on Saturday, the only goal is to stay healthy. As far as the regular season is concerned, we may not be technically done yet, but from every practical standpoint, the Rockets have accomplished all there is to accomplish. They're 64-16, best record in franchise history, locked into the one seed in the postseason. So other than avoiding injuries, there's not a lot to take from any of these final games of the regular season. For the Rockets, the regular season, they've done everything they can possibly do, and as far as further advancement for this team, that can only be determined by what's to come in the playoffs, which start this weekend. So when the playoffs begin, and I would say as soon as Thursday, which late Wednesday night, we'll learn the opponent, we'll learn the schedule, what days they're going to play. We'll take a look at the micro of it, because that's what we do here at Locked On Rockets. We live for the nitty-gritty. So we'll look at the X's and O's of the matchup. I'll have at least one show, maybe more than that, throughout the series, depending on what interviews I can book with the other side, trying to get the lay of the land on how the Rockets and whoever it may be, the Timberwolves, the Nuggets, the Spurs, the Thunder, the Pelicans, so many realistic possibilities with still only 48 hours to go in the regular season. It's crazy how compact it is from 5 through 9 in the Western Conference. So in the days ahead, we'll have a lot of what I call the micro. In today's show, I'm going to do one final look at the macro, one final look before the playoffs, and then of course we'll revisit this subject when the playoffs come to a close, hopefully not for a couple more months, and a run that ends with the Rockets, led by James Harden, holding a championship trophy. We'll have to wait and see. But the reason I'm going to take the macro view, it's a subject that we've discussed here on Locked On Rockets in the past, and it gets discussed a lot around Rockets Twitter and the Rockets online community, and it's the playoff legacies of James Harden and Mike D'Antoni. Because going into this postseason, the coach and the star player, in the case of James Harden, the MVP of the entire league, it's going to be under the microscope. They've each said that it's the best team they've ever been on. By record, now 64-16, it certainly is. So neither has ever had a chance quite like this to win the NBA crown that thus far has evaded them. So we've discussed a lot in the past why, in my opinion, some of their playoff shortcomings in the past, some make too much of them. And we'll get into that again, but rather than just look at the nitty-gritty of exactly what their history is, I want to take a slightly different approach this time and try and remind people not just what their playoff history is, but where it's actually significant and why nuance, why context matters as we discuss the legacies of James Harden and Mike D'Antoni heading into the postseason. Now, yes, I understand that you could also mount a similar case for Chris Paul in that he's a storied veteran, and even at 32 years old, he's yet to even play in a conference finals. Contrast that to James Harden, who has played in multiple conference finals, and even in the NBA finals, going back to his days with the Thunder. I'm not going to discuss it with Chris for a couple of reasons. First, I think it's well understood that Chris has been limited by opportunity. In all of his years, the Pelicans and Clippers, two franchises that, to put it mildly, not very good. And as far as his best running mate in all his years, despite all of his greatness, take your pick, Blake Griffin, David West, Tyson Chandler, DeAndre Jordan. In today's NBA, with stars teaming up, Chris Paul has not had a fair shot. And he's had plenty of individual moments as well. You can go back to last year, even without Blake Griffin, against a very good Utah team, especially defensively in the first round, Chris Paul averaged 25-10. Go back a couple of years before that, he hit the game winner in Game 7 to knock off the defending champion Spurs in an epic 7-game series. Hit the game winner in Game 7 over Tim Duncan, all on one leg because he was playing on the strained hamstring that cost him a couple of games in the upcoming Clippers-Rockets series. So with Chris, I know that there are some that point to his lack of playoff history, but I think most folks, not everyone, but most in the NBA community are understanding, because even at 32 years old, he's a victim of circumstance. He has had that many opportunities. Also, let's be real, he is less of a centerpiece on this team. He's very important, but there's a reason why James Harden is the MVP. There's a reason why Mike D'Antoni is the reigning coach of the year. These two guys are at the forefront. Chris, he's certainly very important, but for this team, he's in a supporting role. I think he'll ultimately be very valuable and very important in that. But between that and him being a victim of circumstance, to me, the Chris Paul playoff legacy is slightly less impactful in terms of the grand scheme of this Rockets season and where it goes than James Harden and Mike D'Antoni. Now, we're going to break this show into three parts, our usual three-part show. And in segment two and segment three, I'm going to discuss James Harden and Mike D'Antoni specifically. But in this first segment, as promised earlier, I'm going to discuss why, in my opinion, all of this matters, why we need to get into the context. And I'll start with a stat that, if you listen to this show, you've heard me say before, and if you haven't heard me say it, you've probably seen it or heard it on a broadcast on Twitter, and it's that in the James Harden era, the Rockets have never lost to a team with a worse record. In the playoffs, every team that has beaten them has had the same record or better. So the narratives that are out there with James Harden and the Rockets choking, statistically, it's hard to make an argument for that, because if you judge players, and I think franchise players and coaches certainly judge by wins and losses, if you judge them by playoff results and what happens with the team, choking generally means underperforming. That's not what has happened for the Rockets in the James Harden era. A fairly similar story can be said with Mike D'Antoni. The only time before this year that Mike D'Antoni has coached the number one team in the Western Conference, you got to go back to 2005, 13 years ago, when he lost to the eventual champion Spurs, led by Tim Duncan. That's the only time that D'Antoni has lost as a clear favorite. All the others, and actually, and quite frankly, in some of the others, he was a 6th seed, an 8th seed. He's lost with a clearly worse team, and especially when you look at the Greg Popovich matchup, some of those have just been laughably imbalanced. And I've made those points before. Even though James Harden and Mike D'Antoni each get certain reputations nationally, and I was reminded of it Monday, one of the reasons I planned on wanting to do this anyway before the playoffs, because these are the two leaders of the Rockets, it's important to identify what their history is and what they're going up against in this playoff run. I was reminded, there was a writer for Project Spurs, a really good Spurs blog, who pointed out earlier Monday that the Rockets are 24-5 against all the possible playoff teams in the West. 24-5, which is staggering. The next best record? The Warriors at 15-13. That is an 8.5 game edge over playoff teams, which is just ridiculous and shows how good this Rockets team has been, certainly overall, but even better against winning teams. But predictably, there's a number of comments, replies, trying to throw shade with some variation of Houston has always been good in the regular season, playoffs not so much. And of course, statistically, that's inaccurate, because under James Harden, the Rockets in the regular season have been correlated pretty much perfectly with how they perform in the playoffs. And with one exception 13 years ago, and that was against the second-seeded Spurs, the same can be said for Mike D'Antoni. So statistically, it's inaccurate. But I've said that before, and while I think folks are understanding of the statistic, I understand the reality that games are not just played on paper. There's an emotional component. And I sense that some of you, or at least some people out there, struggle with the idea of the reality of the math with the question of, are you letting James Harden or Mike D'Antoni off the hook? And I want to clarify that that is not at all the intent. It is not to minimize the shortcomings. For example, last year, Game 5, Game 6, James Harden was not good enough. He wasn't a good enough player. Mike D'Antoni was not a good enough coach. I think they would be the first to admit that. And yes, if you want to point to one game or one moment here or there, then sure, I guess if you want, you can say so-and-so choked, which is what a lot of NBA Twitter and fans seem to love to do. But at some point, you can throw out terms like that so much that it completely loses its meaning. And as a Rockets community, what I think we all want, most of us at least, is for the Rockets to win the title. Everything is judged through that prism. So yes, the Rockets with James Harden, the MVP in the prime of his career, every year that they don't win the title, it's a failure. It's a missed opportunity. So James should be held accountable. Every player should be held accountable. But the key, if you're the Rockets trying to win a title, it's not just to scream and throw tantrums. It's to figure out what the path forward is. How do you position yourself to actually win a title? And so what it comes down to is not just trying to scream and feel good because you feel let down and throw it a tantrum, but if you want to fix the problem, you need to accurately identify what the problem is. And if the Rockets are continually beating the teams they should beat, like Oklahoma City, they're better than over 82, and losing to teams like San Antonio last year, 61 wins to Houston's 55, then it's tough to see that their playoff performance is so disproportionate that choking is the problem. What seems to be much more likely to be the problem is the same thing that caused them to be a worse team over 82 games. And fortunately, that's the path that Daryl Morey took. Last offseason, they brought in a second playmaker in Chris Paul. That diversified the offense. They brought in more defense in Chris Paul, Luke Bamute, PJ Tucker. That took a middle-of-the-pack defense last year to top 10 this year, top 5 at times, especially when healthy. And the Rockets have been more balanced on offense. They've been a more balanced team overall that can win defensively as well. And all of a sudden, they've gone from a 55-win team to a mid-60s win juggernaut. But if you had listened to the takes from the likes of Skip Bayless and NBA Twitter last May, the primary thing to do would have been to either get James Harden a psychologist or to give up on the idea of building around James Harden as a franchise cornerstone. Fortunately, the Rockets didn't do that because they understood what the problem was. And it doesn't mean that you're giving James Harden a pass, because you don't. It was a bad game in Game 6, and it was a bad finish to Game 5 in San Antonio last year. Yeah, it wasn't good. We'll talk about that more in the second segment when we dive into James Harden. But these things happen. The word choke has gotten so overused, I think because folks love a punching bag on Twitter. The athletes of our generation, not just basketball, but all the sports, I would say LeBron James and Tom Brady, they've each been to the finals 8 times. LeBron has lost 5 of them. Tom Brady has lost 3 of them. I looked up some of LeBron's final stats. You can find an NBA finals game that LeBron scored 8 points, was outscored by 5 members of, other than Dirk Nowitzki, a relatively ordinary Dallas Mavericks team, actually was outscored by Deshaun Stevenson off the bench. These things happen. It is a sport, especially basketball, where sample size matters. There's a reason you play 82 games in the regular season to sort out home court advantage. There's a reason you play best of 7 in the playoffs. You have to win 4 out of 7. Even the best players, like LeBron James and Tom Brady, have lowlights on the biggest stage. It happens. You are going to fail. The best thing ultimately you could do is not to magically become clutch. It's to put yourself on the big stage enough to have build a consistently good enough team that you keep giving yourselves opportunities, and ultimately, some of those, the bounces are going to go your way. It's not magically trying harder and learning to be clutch instead of choking. Now, there can be moments of choking. For example, 95 NBA Finals, Nick Anderson, the 4 missed free throws at the end, that was a meltdown. In the rest of his career, he went from being a very good free throw shooter to a bad one. That's no coincidence. That's choking. But we throw around choking so much in modern sports discourse that it's actually lost its meaning, to where we can't differentiate between what's just a bad game and what actually is choking. In the case of Harden, I'll discuss it more in segment 2, but the San Antonio series, it's proven this year. It's not a choke. There's nothing that was career-defining or altering on that. Harden came back to work this year, and he was better than ever. It was a bad game. And yes, it matters. It's not letting him off the hook. But in terms of fixing the problem, there are lots of outliers over a best-of-7 series, 82 games in the regular season, close to 100 when you combine the playoffs and the regular season. The Rockets and Spurs last year, the Spurs won 6 more games in the regular season, 61-55. They won 3 of the 4 head-to-head, including all of the final 3. The first 5 games of the series, they won 3 of the 5 with Kawhi Leonard playing. And had the Rockets won that Game 6 that so many people love to bag on Harden for, they would have gone back to San Antonio with a rested Kawhi Leonard ready to play Game 7. Is there anyone, especially after how Game 5 ended, that really thought the Rockets were going to win that game? Let's pretend the Rockets would have won Game 6 by 15 points instead of losing it by 30-whatever. Does that really change what happens? Do you really think the Rockets are going to advance to the Warriors and possibly push the Warriors? If not, then why is that the primary thing you remember? If you want to win a title, that's an outlier. If you think you were going to lose anyway, then the problem is why you think you were going to lose anyway. What went wrong in the first 5 games? What went wrong in the regular season when you lost to them 3 out of 4 times, when they won 6 more games than you did? That's the problem. So what happened as far as Harden in Game 6, it sucks, it's disappointing, and you're not letting him off the hook. But as far as trying to fix the problem, that wasn't the issue for the Rockets. They need James Harden a shrink. To get to the next level, they needed more defense, they needed more diversity to their attack, and they recognized that. Because the NBA is a game of sample size. Now, maybe if it was the NCAA tournament, it would be different. If it was a one-game scenario, then maybe there's some truth to this. I've been harsh on Virginia in the past. One seed this year, who of course became the first one seed to lose to a 16 seed, UMBC. Because Virginia playing such a slow-paced, methodical style that limits possession, I think it makes you more vulnerable to upsets. And to win an NCAA tournament championship, you've got to win 6 consecutive games. There's no other way around it. Well, maybe you can have certain fundamental flaws there because everything comes to a head in a one-game scenario. But in the NBA, you don't have UMBC winning. There's a reason for that. You don't have Loyola Chicago going to the Final Four. This is not a game where championships are won by random outlier games. It's a game where you play 82 games in the regular season to determine home court, which gives you a big leg up, and then you determine the champion through 4 best-of-7 playoff series. It's the opposite of a one-game winner-take-all scenario. It is a grind. It's almost like Major League Baseball, in some cases even more grinding, because you have 4 best-of-7 playoff series. So to look at any one game and blow it up into saying, well, this is why we lost. No, the Rockets lost to the Spurs last year because the Spurs won 4 games out of 7, and 3 of the 4 were not Game 6. So you need to focus on the totality of the evidence because the NBA is not about one-game samples. So we'll talk about James Harden and Mike D'Antoni situations more in just a moment, but that's what I want to lead with is the significance of the stat, the significance of context, because I've thrown out, other folks have as well, the stat about the Rockets under James Harden and Mike D'Antoni almost his entire career with one exception against the second seed Spurs in 2005. Neither losing to teams that are worse than them of the regular season. And I think that stat is fairly well known, but I think some struggle to kind of make peace with it because it feels like, to some, the sense I get is that you're letting or making excuses or letting guys off the hook. You're not. Those guys have made mistakes. They are problems. And until they win a ring, they're going to be there. The question is, how do you fix the problems moving forward? And that's why that context, in my opinion, is very important. Now, jumping into the second segment, I wanted to lead off by giving background on why, in my opinion, context is so important. Because, yes, I know it can feel good to say, oh, so-and-so choked, and you can get a few cheap laughs on Twitter that way. But the reality, it's usually not that accurate, and to some extent, it does a disservice to the entire really concept of fair and balanced analysis because we can't even use the word correctly because we use it in so many different contexts. But I think once we look into what actually defines a choke, and the fact of the matter is, in terms of individual games, in a sport like basketball, everyone is going to have bad games. I mentioned LeBron James having a few NBA Finals games he would like to forget. You play so many, it's going to happen. Fortunately, the NBA, it's a balance of 82 games, best of 7 playoff series over and over again, and that's what's going to determine. That's why you can't blow any one game out of proportion. And I'm going to start by discussing James Harden because the player, it's a player's league. It's more important than the coach. Now, Mike D'Antoni, he's important, but I'm going to start by discussing James because I know he's the bigger lightning rod. And I'm sure there are some listening to this podcast that are going to say, well, Game 6 is not the first elimination game that I remember James Harden having a down game in. And you wouldn't be wrong. However, the context that's important is that he's also had some really, really good ones. For example, lots of folks like to bag on him for the Game 5 in the 2015 Western Conference Finals when he had 12 turnovers at Golden State. okay? The only reason why the Game 5 existed in the first place is because Harden in Game 4 went for a ridiculous 45 points, 9 assists on 60% shooting. He was also crazy good in Game 1 and Game 2 in Oakland in that series. A lot mentioned the prior round before that. That was the deepest Rockets run in the Harden era. That in the Game 6 in L.A., the great Josh Smith and Corey Brewer-led comeback, Harden wasn't on the floor. Yeah, he was not at his best in Game 6. Well, Game 5, the elimination game right before that, he had a triple-double on nearly 50% shooting, 26, 11, and 10. And then in Game 7, which the Rockets won, another elimination game, he had 31 points. So again, you're picking and choosing. We can go all the way back to the 2012 finals. A lot of Oklahoma City fans like to point out that Harden was not at his best in that series against the Heat that the Thunder lost in 5 games. Okay, well, the Western Conference Finals, the only reason the Thunder were even there, the Thunder were down 0-2 against a Spurs team that had won 20 consecutive games, historically elite, and Harden played out of his mind. That was the biggest reason why the Thunder were in the finals, were because of how clutch Harden was, how much he overachieved, especially Game 5, the one road game the Thunder got in that series. Who was making the plays down the stretch in San Antonio? It was James Harden. And guess what? His dagger three in the final minute? It was right over Kawhi Leonard, the guy who so many now act like is his kryptonite. The point is, this stuff is cyclical. And if you need more evidence, look, last year, Harden averaged 28.5 points, 8.5 assists, and 5.5 rebounds per game in the playoffs. Does that sound like a guy who is somehow a worse player in the playoffs? A couple more elimination games that come to mind. Remember that Game 6, the infamous Damian Lillard shot in Portland back in 2014? That game, Harden had 34 points on 9 of 15, literally 60% shooting. For a guard, that's insane. The 2016 playoffs in Oakland, Game 5, Harden had 35 points on 12 of 23 shooting. Again, over 52%. Those are ridiculous stats, even in elimination game. So the reason I point to all of these, it's not to say that the lowlights haven't occurred, but if there's something in James Harden that were just to magically make him a worse player when the lights are on, then it would show up a lot more regularly than it does. You certainly would not see him overall having the numbers that he does. You certainly wouldn't see the impact elimination games, which I just ran through. You wouldn't see the Rockets taking care of business against teams that are better than over 82 games. The lowlights have occurred. Now, as I've said before, I think some of them happen in the regular season as well. I think maybe his style of play makes him, and the officiating makes him a little more prone to volatility. But, I don't know, even the numbers in that don't necessarily reflect it. In terms of free throw attempts per game in the regular season versus the playoffs, 7.2 in the regular season, 8.2 in the regular season, 7.2 in the playoffs. Turnovers per game, a lot love to poke holes in him for that. Actually, he averages more turnovers per game in the regular season for his career, 3.5 per game, than in the playoffs when he averages 3.2. Now, the shooting percentages are slightly lower, but again, I've said this before, generally everyone's shooting percentages are going to be a little bit lower in the playoffs because you're playing higher quality defenses. You're not getting your occasional team against the Phoenix Suns who just doesn't care. But I'm sure some of you are tired of hearing about the individual numbers. I get it. Star players are defined by their team winning and ultimately championships. Okay, well, that ties back into the theme, what I've said plenty of times before, which is the Rockets with James Harden as a franchise player, they have never lost to a team with a worse record over 82 games. None of that is to let him off the hook. The mistakes have happened. They need to be addressed. But if we're just going to say, well, Harden's a playoff choker, which is what some of the narratives are, we're getting lost in something that's not even the real issue because, again, if we're just something like, oh, the lights go on and then Harden's performance is worse, then how do you explain all the positive games? How do you explain beating the teams, anyone, that they should beat based on the regular season? In other words, the problems run deeper. Until this year, the Rockets had never been a top-shelf team as good as any in the league with James Harden. And, you know, it's fair to poke holes in his game because of that. For example, I think this year is the first year you might can make the argument that he's been above average defensively. Last year, when he finished second to Russell Westbrook and should have won, it was a huge step forward for him defensively just to generally be average. And I don't know how much of it is effort versus how much of it is talent. But for example, Harden, most years, is not as impactful defensively as, say, LeBron James and Kevin Durant. And whether it's effort, talent, both, we can get into, you know, height, length, his quickness or lack thereof in terms of lateral mobility, et cetera, et cetera. Maybe Harden's defensive limitations are why it's been so hard to build a top five team, and it took adding the pieces that they did, Chris Paul, Luke Bamute, PJ Tucker, we mentioned them earlier, to get the Rockets to this level, not just offensively, but defensively as well. That's fine. I'm open to discussing that. James Harden is not a perfect player, and I think he realizes that as well. That's why he's worked so hard the last two offseasons in particular at improving his fitness, his commitment level, his leadership, all those things. The point is that these problems are not just playoff problems. They happen in the regular season as well. So for he and the Rockets to address them, they need to understand what it is. So this whole idea of Harden's problem being, well, you can't depend on him in the playoffs, not only is it not really supported by the data, the reason it's important to acknowledge it, because I know some are saying, well, are you letting him off the hook? Well, no, not only is it just about being honest, it's about being able to fix the problem. Because again, the Skip Bayless of the world would have you believe that either the Rockets need to get a shrink or just give up on the idea of Harden. Fortunately, that's not what Daryl Morey did, and they went out and built the best team in franchise history. To get back to the most recent example, what's kind of funny, I was having a Twitter conversation with one of our really good listeners here at Locked On Rockets about the playoff series last year. What's so funny, and this is the most prominent example of Harden when everyone thinks of so-called choking, they go back to the Game 6 last year against the Spurs. People don't even remember the Harden choking game. If he choked at any, and it's right here in my archives here at Locked On Rockets, it was Game 5, the one in which the Rockets were up 5 with 2.5 minutes to go in regulation or only scored 2 more points the rest of the way. The one in which, despite Kawhi Leonard not playing in overtime, they couldn't muster enough offense to get it done. That was the game they choked. You go back to the X's and O's, in my opinion, sure, some of it's not having enough playmakers. They didn't have Chris Paul back then. But Harden needed to control what he controlled. Too many possessions. They waited until under 5 seconds left in the shot clock, late in Game 5 of regulation, certainly in overtime. And by virtue of getting that deep into the clock, it made the entire offense more predictable. The Spurs locked onto what they were going to do, blocked a couple of his shots. In general, the offense got stale, and that's his fault. He didn't run the offense like it was the first quarter, which is what they need to do. Instead, he played the clock too much. Pick your reason, but if you want to say Harden choked, and I don't even know if choke's the right word, but if you want to say Harden dramatically underperformed, that was the game where he let his team down, and I said as much on the podcast. Game 6, Harden certainly was not good, but that was a team effort. In my opinion, what happened in Game 6, I've said before, I was angry after Game 6, or after Game 5. After Game 6, I was disappointed, I was frustrated, but I understood. That team was mentally broken after Game 5. That was their opportunity, especially without Kawhi in overtime. They didn't get it done, and they did not believe that they were going to be able to win a Game 7 on the road in San Antonio with Kawhi Leonard rested and ready to go. So the effort waned, the focus wasn't there, and against a team led by Greg Popovich, it was the perfect recipe for a blowout. And that's what happened. But ultimately, and you can put blame on everyone, Harden is the leader, Mike D'Antoni and the coach, all the way down. Again, I'm not saying it's excusable, but ultimately I understand why it happened. The Rockets aren't the first team to let down in that kind of situation, and they won't be the last. They didn't believe they were going to win the series. Game 5 was when things actually went wrong, when the series could actually have been, if not won, at least strongly put in the Rockets' command, and they blew it. And there are some legitimate X's and O's reasons as to why. I mentioned playing the clock too much. Maybe it's playing hero ball. I don't know. But if we want to talk about James Harden in the 2017 playoffs, that should be where we discuss, because there are some very tactical X's and O's things that he should do better. And that's what we should be focused on. Instead, so many, at least nationally, just say, well, what about James Harden? He didn't show up in Game 6. Well, what the hell does that mean? Because even if they had won that game, they weren't going to win the series anyway, and we all know why. The problems that were there all year long, the problems that were there the first 5 games of the series, fortunately, the Rockets and Daryl Morey, they get it. They went out and fixed it. But to me, that shows you how lazy, how disingenuous it is to focus on just Game 6, because you're really not even getting at the root of the problem. If you want to fix the problem, it's not just yelling and screaming when things don't go your way and throwing a tantrum. No, it's actually getting to the root cause. Why did we get in this spot? Why are we not going to get a ring? And then what are the most reasonable paths to do to fix that? And usually, it's not going to be just try harder or don't choke or be clutch. No, it's usually something that shows up and we're capable of that level of discourse, and I just think we need to be better. And hopefully the Rockets, if James Harden and Mike D'Antoni end up winning a ring this year, hopefully they can be a positive example that folks keep in the back of their mind the next time they want to label or mislabel, in this case, a player as just coming up short because they choked or whatever. Now, last but not least, let's turn to Mike D'Antoni. I mentioned his stats earlier. It's pretty similar to James Harden. There's almost never been a time in which there's a series that you say Mike D'Antoni should have won, but didn't. That's why I don't really care when you say, well, coach hadn't won a championship, or what's his record against Popovich? Okay, how many of those series should he have won? If not, there's probably something, either the system isn't working in the regular season, which certainly doesn't seem to be the case with the Rockets performing now, so that's why I don't like the idea of using it as evidence of why the Rockets' regular season should be kind of, I don't know, poked holes in or use it to throw shade. Either there's probably the regular season, or the team just wasn't good enough, and 9 times out of 10, it ends up being that. But even if the Rockets play the Spurs, do I have any hesitation in terms of the D'Antoni-Popovich matchup? No. Two of those you can throw off. One of them was the Suns, the fading Suns. They were an 8 seed, I believe. They're either 6 or an 8, I can't remember, but it was the year the Suns had Shaq. They were far gone from D'Antoni style. Shaq, fading Nash, they were over the hill. It wasn't working out. They lost to the defending champion Spurs with Tim Duncan in his prime. And then the 2012, the Lakers without Kobe Bryant, that train wreck Lakers year, the one Dwight Howard, I don't care who the coach was. The 8 seed Lakers going up against the eventual Western Conference champion Spurs, that was a mismatch. There's no coach in NBA history that could have done anything with that. Last year, I mentioned it before, the Spurs were 6 games better than the Rockets over the regular season. Took 3 of 4, including the last 3, head-to-head. 2007 playoffs. Guys, the Rockets beat, D'Antoni's Suns beat the Spurs 2 of the first 4 games, including Game 4 in San Antonio. That series swung because Robert Horry hip-checked Steve Nash, Amari Stoudemire left the bench by like a step, and ultimately, because of the automatic suspension policy at the time, that triggered his absence, and that let the Spurs beat a weakened Phoenix team in Game 5 in Phoenix to swing the series and take back home court advantage. Other than that, you got to go all the way back to 2005, 13 years, to see a D'Antoni team that underachieved in the playoffs based on what they showed compared to what they showed you in the regular season. And even in that one, I've said before, I'm pretty understanding of the Suns' failures against the Spurs, because when you think about the Suns back then, it was a very different NBA philosophically, and especially with Amari Stoudemire in his prime, they could either beat you if they had enough athleticism to compete with Amari, he had more power, and if they had the power, if they could try and beat you on the glass, then Amari was just way too quick. Back then, the only big man in the NBA with a combination of power, size, and speed to combat what the Suns wanted to do in terms of the mismatches with Amari Stoudemire and Sean Marion up front was the San Antonio Spurs with Tim Duncan in his prime, a top 10 all-time NBA player, maybe a top 5 one in terms of his defensive impact. So I actually think that was, more than anything, just a bad matchup. But even if you want to say no excuses, the Suns lost when they were the one seed. It happened one time 13 years ago. Is that really some massive indictment? As far as the other times, the Rockets, the 3 seed last year, and certainly the 8 seeded Lakers and Suns, the 2 prior times before that, it just so happened that those were years that Mike D'Antoni drew Greg Popovich in the playoffs. It didn't matter that it was D'Antoni against Popovich. It could have been D'Antoni against anybody. Those teams were going to lose. They were not good enough. It was proven over 82 games. This is not to say that D'Antoni is perfect. It's similar to Harden. I think, and he's acknowledged in the past, he has a tendency to play too short of a rotation. Maybe last year, the 7-man rotation played a role in the lack of energy late in Game 5 and Game 6. Fortunately, this year, he's played a 9, sometimes even a 10-man rotation. Hopefully, players are more fresh for the playoffs. Hopefully, he sticks with a 9-man rotation in the playoffs, because I think there are certainly not at least 9 players worthy of that on this current Rockets team. We'll have to wait and see. But when I say that D'Antoni shouldn't be burned at the stake or called a fraud or that his teams are a mirage, it's not to say he's a perfect coach. He's not. The rotation is one thing you can exploit. I'm sure there's other X's and O's matchups in individual games that you can point to. But as we said with Harden, flukes in individual games happen. It's a sport where you have to look, you have to be able to see the forest for the trees. And if the results you're getting in the playoffs match what you're getting in the regular season, there's nothing about your system that's just magically not translating to the playoffs. It's that you have probably a good system that's just not quite great. And there are flaws there in the playoffs, certainly, and he should be held accountable. But there's probably flaws in the regular season as well. And so that's why, as with James Harden, the Rockets taking such a leap this year, it's the best regular season team by far that either Mike D'Antoni or James Harden has ever had. And so that in and of itself is a very real reason to believe in why this year is different. It's not a guarantee, but I think in both cases, the story is similar. And that's why it matters not to just say, well, they lost, nothing else matters, burn them at the stake, they choked or whatever. No, nuance matters, context matters. And when you see the questions that are going to come up in the next few days and all the playoff previews about the playoff history of Mike D'Antoni, James Harden, maybe even Chris Paul, as I mentioned earlier, I don't necessarily buy that much. This is why the context, the nuance, it matters. I know I've mentioned some of it before, and that's why I didn't want to spend too much time on Harden and D'Antoni specifically, because we've got plenty of shows in our archives discussing that. But what I wanted to tie all this together is the importance, not just the numbers, but why it matters to look at this with more nuance, look at it with specifics, so that we can actually have a fair and balanced discussion if things don't work out for whatever reason about how to fix it. And with that, I will wrap things up because, well, we're going to get back to the micro very soon. Rockets in action in the next two nights. Lakers and Kings are off the regular season, although not a lot to take other than, knock on wood, hope they stay healthy on those fronts. And then, of course, after Wednesday, we'll know the playoff opponent. We'll get down into the nitty-gritty, the matchups, the X's and O's, crossover shows with reporters from wherever the opposing city is, and, of course, post-game recaps throughout the playoffs, previews, all the things you come to know us for here at Locked On Rockets, the only daily podcast covering the NBA's best basketball team. So we're going to talk plenty of specifics in the days ahead. Want to do one macro show going into the playoffs about Harden, D'Antoni, the leaders of the franchise, where they're at, and then we'll get pretty technical from here on out, and we won't really revisit this subject until after the playoffs to see what happens coming off this 64-plus win regular season, and then I think whenever this season comes to an end, we can have a more reasonable and balanced discussion then about what it means to the legacies of James Harden and Mike D'Antoni. So I think that can put a bow on it. As always, you want more content from me, Twitter's the best place to get it. I'm at Ben Dubose. Show is at Locked On Rockets. Also, LockedOnRockets at gmail.com. Facebook at facebook.com/LockedOnRockets or LockedOnRockets.com. All places you can read our content, ask me questions, make suggestions for the show, inquire about how to become a potential advertiser. We've got such a booming audience these days with the playoffs coming up and the Rockets being so heavily anticipated, the best regular season in franchise history. So whatever we can do to make this a better show for you, the fan, or even you, the businessman, don't hesitate to reach out. Once again, Rockets wrap up the regular season the next two nights in Los Angeles to play the Lakers Tuesday and in Sacramento to play the Kings on Wednesday. So until then, I will wrap it up. Again, I'm Ben Dubose. This is Locked On Rockets. Thanks as always to listening. We'll be talking again very soon in the days ahead as the Rockets finally learn their playoff opponent and James Harden and Mike D'Antoni can embark upon hopefully finally getting their first rings as, well, a star player and head coach in the NBA.